Texas bracing itself for Harvey to be the most powerful hurricane to hit the U.S. mainland in over a decade. Slamming into Corpus Christi first, some of the biggest U.S. crude refineries are in the storm's path. Oil and gas operations have already been disrupted, and U.S. gas prices have spiked. As Harvey is said to be the first real natural disaster crisis for President Trump, who on Friday tweeted five times about his enemies before commenting on the storm hours later.
Well, a lot has happened for Alibaba lately. They had an incredible earnings report. Like you said, Alibaba's up 100%. Amazon's up 30% year-to-date. The revenue of Baba is $26 billion over the last 12 months. Amazon's $150 billion. But the operating margins of Alibaba are 33% versus Amazon's 2%. And Alibaba's much stronger earnings growth, 95%, versus Amazon, which has been down 77%.
North Korea is working on its most powerful missile yet, which could reach as far as New York or Washington. A batch of photos published in state media show leader Kim Jong-un visiting his nuclear weapons development center. Reuters' Jack Kim in Seoul says the photos have taken experts off guard. The new rocket would be more powerful than the two-stage rocket Pyongyang tested in July, rattling the region and sparking tougher global sanctions.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Monday. It is August 28, 2017, 5:10 in the morning. Glad you're here with us for another edition of The Opening Bell. Lots to cover this morning. A little bit later on in the program, we'll talk a little bit about the business of sports, specifically college sports, about the football recruiting and player safety issues that are out there. That'll be a little bit later in the program. In a minute, we'll bring in our CEO for today, our CEO Spotlight. Ravin Gandhi is here. But first, we will update the markets this morning on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. Dow futures are looking for a negative open on Wall Street later this morning, off about 18 points. S&P 500 futures are off about a point, and the NASDAQ futures are off about five. Crude oil is at $47.28 a barrel this morning, off about 1.5%. Markets generally in Asia were mixed after investors found no surprises from last week's key meeting of central bankers, while gasoline futures spiked after Tropical Storm Harvey battered Texas's refinery-rich Gulf Coast. Preliminary signs indicate widespread losses, which will have big implications for the U.S. economy and oil and gas prices. Gas futures spiked in trading. S&P Global analysts said about 2.2 million barrels per day of refining capacity were down or being sought by being brought down by Sunday yesterday. The story is continuing today. Benchmark U.S. crude oil, as I again said, at $47.50 a barrel. The dollar fell against the yen and gained against the euro. Of course, all of our thoughts are with the people of Texas as rescues continued overnight. Heavy rain, massive flooding caused by hurricane, then Tropical Storm Harvey along the coast of Texas has hit Houston hard. Rescuers continued into the night, pulling people from homes in Houston and its suburbs. We'll continue with our coverage of that in our news blocks later this morning. As much as 50 inches of rain could fall by the time it is all said and done. Or Texas. A reminder, too, that the best way for you to get involved is to contact the American Red Cross. You can make a quick donation on your phone by texting Harvey to 90999 to make a $10 donation. That's Harvey to 90999 to make a $10 donation to the American Red Cross. And we'll continue, as I said, with coverage of all that's happening around the Houston area in our news coming up. In our CEO spotlight this morning, we're happy to have Ravin Gandhi with us. Ravin Gandhi is a local CEO, GMM Nonstick Coatings is where he's CEO. But he's been in the spotlight this week because of the racist taunts that he's been getting on Twitter after standing up to Donald Trump. And we're happy to have Ravin back. We're going to talk a little bit about that and other stuff. But first, Ravin, good morning. Welcome back to The Opening Bell.
It's a great pleasure.
It's good to see you again because you were one of our first CEO guests on our show. So we've come full circle with you.
I feel like it's an honor.
Lots happened in the last year. Tell us about it.
So for me, I It was kind of an amazing situation. My company, GMM Nonstick Coatings, was acquired by a $7 billion Japanese conglomerate called STK. They sort of emerged from the woodwork, and I had no desire to sell, but they continued convincing me for various reasons why it was the right thing. Primarily, A, they're going to let me do exactly what I was doing before. They've given me about $300 million to buy other businesses in my industry, which is very fun for me. I've started companies, I've built companies, I've sold companies, but I've never bought companies at scale. So that was interesting. We've hired a tremendous amount of people. Not one person was let go. So we think that we're going to be building the world's largest company that makes nonstick coating. So that's really exciting.
Is it sort of standard when we have these takeovers to have it be this happy?
No. In fact, I think that this is probably the reciprocal of what the typical outcome is. And I think one of the reasons why this is going so well is that this wasn't my first rodeo in terms of selling a business to a large corporation. Mm-hmm. And by virtue of me pointing to my prior negative experience to them during the negotiation stage, I was able to, from a legal perspective, get a lot of real ironclad terms in these contracts, which basically guaranteed that I was going to stay very happy. And thus far, it's been almost a year. It's been amazing.
And in this deal, too, was one of the biggest in this field, in this area.
I think this is the largest buyout in the history of our industry. So I'm very proud about that. But the bigger thing was making sure that when we signed those contracts in November of 2016, I wanted to think about the probability that sitting here in, say, August of 17, I had no regret, and I literally have no regret.
So when you get a handful of cash like that to go out and do acquisitions, what are you looking for? What are your goals?
I think that obviously from a business complementary product perspective. So we, every day, 40 million people in this country use my product. So we make Nonstick coatings, and there's a number of people who are obvious targets, and we're in various stages of discussions with them. I think that's the easy answer. I think the harder answer is to make sure that cultures fit and that the people that you would be bringing on board mesh with the culture that we've already built. And that's, I found, to be a much bigger challenge.
Your being active in the community seems to have changed too since we talked. You obviously have some more time to do that. What are you focusing on? What are your passions right now?
From a Chicago, giving back in Chicago perspective, I've always been most passionate about education. And it's been an honor. I've been on the board of CityEar Chicago for the last few years, which is a phenomenal organization that sends highly educated people in their early 20s typically into the worst public schools in Chicago. So you're talking about the South Side, the West Side, and these are schools that are failing to the point where, you know, they're going to be shut down. And these teams of CityEar volunteers go in and help the students, help the teachers in a way that really it can be measured, and we have great data on that. But part of it can't be measured because it might be the difference between a student coming to school and not coming to school. So that's been amazing.
I always refer to the CityEar folks as like the Peace Corps for inner cities. And you may, if you're listening, be familiar with them. They wear those familiar red jackets. Sometimes you'll see them around.
And I'm always talking about scale and let's get bigger. And, you know, we've got about 250 people that are, you know, these core members wearing these red jackets. But my goal when we have discussions on the board is how can we double or triple the size? Because this is just a force for pure good. And it's interesting that you use the word Peace Corps, because one of the challenges I think CityEar has faced is that they are viewed in a sort of soft sense. But one of the things that I think is going to be getting a lot of press very soon is they did a very empirical study with the University of Chicago talking about outcomes, schools that don't have CityEar and schools that have CityEar. And they found some amazing hard evidence that kids who get CityEar starting in third grade up to ninth grade, they're much more likely to stay in school. And given that CityEar targets kids that are the most troubled kids in the first place, when you look at the gang problem we have in the city, when you look at the shooting problem we have in the city, ask yourself, well, who are those kids? They're the kids that left school when they were relatively young and you know, took this horrible path. So what we've started to open our eyes to within CityEar is that, wow, we are actually, in a counterintuitive way, helping solve one of the biggest problems that Chicago has through education. So it's great.
Yeah, and I don't want to steal the thunder of that study whenever that's coming up, but let's talk a little bit more about that. Is it just for the kids having the extra one-on-one or the extra bodies in their classroom helping them achieve these mileposts? Is that what's happening here, or is it something deeper?
I think it's probably something deeper, which is the relationship that a lot of these students feel with the Cityer core member. Because a lot of these children, it's very sad. They might have one or two parents absent. They might be in prison. They might be raised by grandparents or even one grandparent. So there is a lack of familial support, which I can't even fathom. And when you see the Cityer core member who has taken that person on, and it's one-on-one-on-one, we have an annual dinner every year called the Ripples of Hope. And they bring in a lot of Cityer students, which you see these videos. And I mean, they really tug your heartstrings. You see a fourth grader who was tremendous truancy, no relationship, you know, with a lot of his family members. And then they show what happened to him over 1 year with the Cityer volunteer. And I mean, people in the crowd are just crying because it's this kid went from saying, I hate school, I don't like school, and this kid was a huge discipline case, to the end of the year, he's getting A's in classes. And these intangible things that these students, these core members can bring to the school, I just think it's phenomenal. So I'm all about scale, and I'm really trying to help that organization get bigger and bigger, because we're national. I mean, we're all over the country, but in Chicago, we have a real tough problem with the gangs and with crime and shootings.
It sounds like another success story for mentorship. We've talked about that a lot on this program, about not just in schools and in other parts of life, but in business as well, helping, you know, have that mentor in place to help you come up.
Yeah, I'm a very big fan of that in business. One of the other things I'm doing, to your question about giving back, is I've been speaking a lot in the Chicago community to the grad schools. I recently spoke at the University of Chicago at the Polsky Center. I'll be speaking at the Kellogg School of Management in a few weeks. I've gone down a couple times to the University of Illinois, where I went to undergrad, and I've been addressing groups of nascent entrepreneurs, talking about my experiences, in some cases even investing in these deals. But mainly it's to just use my experience in over 20 years now, and to the extent that I can be a positive force from a mentorship perspective to a startup company, I love that. It's a passion.
You're also being a force out there too, talking about politics. I've seen you on CNBC and in the New York Times and other places quoted. You're not hesitant to speak out about what you're seeing happen on a national level with the Trump administration in business.
Yeah, it was really a difficult decision for me last year when CNBC asked if I would be willing to go on and speak what I thought. Almost everyone in my life said, don't do this. You know, you've got, you know, literally no upside. But I found that as I've spoken out more and more, I've just become more and more comfortable that, you know, you only get one shot in life. And if I'm not willing to say what I think, then I probably don't believe it. So I'm very willing to.
What do you think? Here we are 6 months in. You're a CEO. You're just the kind of person that we need to hear from. What do you think?
I think that there are certain aspects of the Trump administration that I support what he's doing very, very, very narrowly on an economic agenda. I do think that the U.S. might have had a little bit of overregulation. I do think that in some cases taxes can come down. So in those areas, I think I support it. I narrowly support some of the things he said on the campaign trail, for instance, term limits. I would be the biggest fan if we actually got term limits to go through, but he doesn't seem to be talking about that. Mm-hmm. I would be a fan of infrastructure if that went through. That said, I have been frankly disgusted with some of the things that I have seen coming out of this administration, particularly just this weekend. We saw what happened with the white supremacists and the Nazis in Charlottesville, and I almost couldn't contain my anger at the non-response of the Trump administration to calling out flat out what is a cancer in this country, with the guy who is willing to tweet within seconds if a Muslim, you know, in another country hits someone with the car, or if a CEO does something he doesn't like. I mean, within seconds he responds, and yet there is this deafening dog whistle that is out there where he just dances around this issue. And by not condemning white supremacy, neo-Nazi distinctly, he is sending a message to a lot of people. And I find that to be absolutely disgusting.
And you're not the only CEO either that's criticized him for things like his immigration policy and those kinds of things. Immigration specifically, as the CEO of a global corporation, you could talk to us about how important it is to keep those doors open.
Sure. I went on to Time.com, and they had an analysis of his newest immigration proposal, and they have a point system. You have to get 30 points before you can even apply, literally before you can even apply. And I took the test, and I think I got about 32 points, you know. And I'm thinking, my parents were poor immigrants when they came to Chicago in 1969. You know, I was born and raised up in Waukegan, Illinois, and it was a very blue-collar but very happy community. My block was, my next door neighbor was an African-American policeman. Right around the corner, there was a white fireman. I mean, this is how I grew up. And there were so many immigrants. And I think, and I look at how positively my family has, you know, I've been so lucky to build a big business and this amazing outcome. And I'm thinking, this is what America really is. There is a specific question on the new form. It says, have you won a Nobel Prize? Have you won an Olympic medal? These are real questions.
Wow.
And you look at that going, what kind of a signal are we sending to the rest of the world? Yeah. You know how many people win Nobel Prizes? Not many.
Yeah.
You know, so I really, this is, you know, and I don't want to demonize Mr. Trump, and I respect the office, but I really feel that so passionate that we have to fight as citizens who oppose this stuff. You have to at least say what you think and hope that you can convince others to go along with you.
I mean, yet we see the stock market, all of the other markets, the economic indicators, they're all looking so positive. Is that what it's going to take to change the course, to see that go the opposite direction, or are we sort of stuck with this course?
That's a very good question. And I separate the economy and say the justice issues, if you want to call it that way. There is a very good chance that the economy keeps ticking along and the stock market might keep going higher. And in that sense, I do support positive economic, you know, moves from the Trump administration, as I did from the Obama administration. But I like to mentally divorce that from what I consider to be some of these issues of greater injustice, because one of the probably the biggest reason I was willing to go on and speak against candidate Trump last year was because he had this birtherism issue that he was going off and talking about President Obama wasn't born in this country. And it sickened me to such a degree because he obviously knew it was false. Right. But what Mr. Trump has been a genius of his entire life, and I literally mean genius, he knows what the mob wants. Okay. Mm-hmm. And when he built the Trump Tower, I've read The Art of the Deal, and he has been really prescient at figuring out what people want. He knew that there was an audience of people who wanted to hear, oh, this president's not one of us. And it's disgusting, and he knew it, and he fomented it. But I don't think the answer is just to demonize the president now and say he's a bad guy. I think the deeper and harder question is, why do we still have all those people who want to hear that in this country?
Yeah, yeah.
That's what keeps me up at night.
Let's go back to, you said you're lecturing at Kellogg and U of Illinois. Entrepreneurship. What would one of those lectures sound like if we were in the audience? What are you telling people?
So I have a presentation I've been giving called Four Deals and Lessons Learned. And I talk about my career chronologically from college graduation of 1994 to the present day. And the first deal was when I had joined the business that my father had started when I was in high school, and how we sold that business and, you know, what the lessons were. Then when I invested in a pharmaceutical business called Hester Biosciences, which we then took public. And then the third deal was GMM, which is the company I just sold. And the last deal was this company called Kimi, which is a New York-based startup that we've raised $100 million and we're revolutionizing the locksmith industry. In every one of those four deals, I basically, in very big font, says, here are the lessons. And most of those lessons converge around, typically business is harder than you think it's going to be. Typically, it's actually going to be miserable in certain situations. And a mistake that you don't want to make is to give up, because a lot of people can't believe how hard it is to start a company. And a lot of times, that's exactly what separates the people who make it and who don't make it, is just that tenacity.
Is it basically tenacity, or do you have to have, I mean, because I could imagine it has to be more than that. I mean, things have to come together. I mean, what would you tell people who are at that sort of bottom looking up going, I need more than tenacity?
Well, so there is, and I've written a lot about this, where, right, you know, luck is just one aspect of things that you need, and tenacity is just one aspect of things. I think if you start at the level of what is my business, the question is, are you solving a problem? Are you solving a problem with your business that is a big enough problem where people will pay you to solve that problem? And by the way, you can make money. And a lot of problems I've noticed with people's business ideas is that they aren't really solving a real problem. They're solving an inconvenience that they feel in their life. And they say, well, because I'm inconvenienced in this way, I'm sure millions of other people will. And that's my problem. That's my pain point. And then I say, okay, that's your pain point. Here's a question, guys. Is this Tylenol pain or is this morphine pain? Because if your pain isn't big enough where I need to take morphine to solve it, I probably won't, you know, engage your company. And a lot of people kind of look at me going, well, wow, that's really a tough way to frame that. I don't know if this is, you know, morphine. And I'm like, that's what it takes. So once you even have that good business idea, then tenacity, then hiring the right people, then setting the right culture, then, you know, embracing the difficulty and embracing the difficulty of business sets in. But it's, nothing is easy. And the last thing I tell these kids is, be happy it's not easy. Because if it were easy, everyone would do it.
Right, right. So talk to me about Kimi. I mean, here you've found a problem and you're solving for it.
Kimi is amazing. I was mentoring at the Columbia University Business School in 2012. And the student that I had met through that process was named Greg March. Mm-hmm. And he was in his mid-20s. And he had this idea to build a robot that could copy your key, your house key or your car key, and it would do it in the cloud. So it, you know, it copies your key in 30 seconds, which is kind of interesting. But what's far more interesting is that if you get locked out of your house and you have used this service, you can go to the robot that might be in a 7-Eleven or a Bed Bath & Beyond or a Rite Aid, put your fingerprint on there, type in your email address, and it'll give you your key again. Mm-hmm. So we are disaggregating the $7 or $8 billion locksmith industry, which has been sitting around for 100 years with no innovation whatsoever. So we've raised over $100 million. We are hiring people every month. There's a ton of our units right here in Chicago. We're in every major city in America right now. And it has been amazing for me to watch Greg and his CTO, Chris, and these students I've known for 5 years turn into these amazing leaders where they have over 100 employees. I was just at our board meeting in New York last Friday. Our office is right next to Penn Station. And I was just blown away at, you know, how smart all of these people are who are building this company. So I truly believe Kimi will be a billion-dollar business.
So as we close here, are you optimistic about where we're at and where we're headed, or do we have work to do?
I am optimistic. Whenever I get questions like that, I think about Martin Luther King, who had, you know, a lot of good quotes. One, you know, the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice. I always think mm-hmm. about that when I hear about things like Charlottesville. But I also think from a political perspective about another one of his quotes, which is, in the end, it will not be the strident clamor of the bad people that's appalling. It's the silence of the good people. Mm-hmm. So I try to speak out like this to convince all of these moderates who say, oh, well, there's a few little things we don't like, but it's okay. My view is it's not okay. You know, I think another thing that Martin Luther King said is he said, as a moderate, be very cognizant that you don't prefer a negative peace, which is the absence of tension, to a positive peace, which is the presence of justice. So in that sense, I think that it's really important to, though I might not disagree with everything President Trump is doing, I don't want to shut up about the stuff that I think is really bad.
Well, thank you for being a good and strong voice, and best of luck to you going forward.
Thanks a lot.
Ravin Gandhi is the CEO and founder of GMM Nonstick Coatings. You can follow him on Twitter at RavinGandhi1 and also find more about GMM Nonstick Coatings at GMMDL.com. We're going to continue our conversation with Ravin after the bell and post our full conversation in the podcast of The Opening Bell a little bit later on this morning. You can find those, of course, at WGNRadio.com.
From ABC News, Tech Trends. Think it's time to go keyless?
There's over 20,000 videos on YouTube about how to pick a lock.
Unlike some of the other smart lock systems on the market, the Auto Lock system boasts a compact design that tries to blend in with the other hardware in your home. Sam Hadala is the company's CEO.
Basically an entirely digital access system for your home, much like you've been used to in your car.
Hadala says misplaced keys is a common tale.
It turned out for their keys in their wallet, it was 24 hours before they'd often realize that that had gone missing. For their phone, it was 15 minutes.
But there's no keyhole to be found on the Auto Lock. Instead, it's app-controlled. That's handy when you need to give someone access when you're not around. Simply send them a virtual key to their inbox.
From dog walkers to housekeepers to people delivering packages.
It's convenience that'll cost you. Auto is one of the most expensive locking systems on the market. It retails for about $700. With Tech Trends, I'm Chuck Sievertson, ABC News.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. It's 5:40 on this Monday edition of the Opening Bell with college sports getting underway, college football season getting underway. We thought we'd take a little time to talk about the business of sports this morning. And we want to bring in Joe Lucchese with the National Next College Student Athlete, NCSA. He's the head of football recruiting there. Joe, good morning. Welcome to the Opening Bell.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me.
This is an exciting time, I think, for all of us who like college sports. And I bet you this is probably pretty much your high season, right?
Oh, absolutely. High school football just started here in Chicago. College football this past weekend, and the Bears are right around the corner. It's a great time.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about college sports. As kids start hitting the field again, what's different this year with the way college athletes are handled and dealt with?
Yeah, so there's been a few new rules when it comes to college recruiting this year for football. The biggest rule changes that happened this year is there's now an early signing period for the Division I athletes, and also there's going to be early official visits offered for athletes as well starting in April. So a lot of new changes in terms of recruiting itself. A lot of things are staying the same. You know, coaches are going to be hitting the road, watching kids at games and looking for highlight videos, and recruiting is just really getting underway now.
We thought it was interesting because we've seen several things written, and including on your website, too, about how kids and their parents should be treating this like a business. Talk to us a little bit about that. What does that mean? Does that mean that they should be engaged in the potential financial part of this, or just understand that this could be their future?
Yeah, so I think it's really important to understand that you really only get one opportunity to go through the recruiting process. So if you sit back and wait for college coaches to connect with you or sit back and wait for things to just happen, a lot of the times you're going to be sitting as a senior uncommitted in April like I was personally. So I think what we try to do is guide kids through the process, understand that you need to start at least researching college programs early, understand what opportunities are out there, and you know we can really help kids find the right fit for them both academically and athletically.
Well, talk to us a little bit about some of the steps, maybe like 1, 2, 3, that some of those kids should take if they're in this process.
Yeah, so the first thing that kids have to do is they have to look at their academics. The NCAA, the NAIA, junior colleges, and every school is going to have academic requirements that that you need to hit in order to be able to play and get admitted to the school. So that's going to be number one. Number two, start to research and find the right fit. And from there, take your recruiting into your own hands and don't wait for coaches to contact you. Start to send out emails, get your social media accounts in order. And then from there, be realistic. You know, find the right opportunity, the right divisional level, and really make sure that you have everything you need in order and start to make connections with college coaches.
Yeah, I'm guessing that for kids who are serious about this, they follow all of those, but I bet you find every once in a while somebody who hasn't. At what point is it too late for them to turn that around and get into business?
Yeah, so recruiting is really going to kickstart when you hit the varsity level. But, you know, really depending on how good you are, recruiting can start as early as eighth grade. So, you know, it really, through senior year, you know, there's going to be opportunities through senior football season into the off season. It's really not too late to get started right now if you're a senior. But the earlier you get started, the more opportunities there's going to be for you in the long run.
Let's talk a little bit about scholarships because, I mean, that's, I think, what a lot of kids are hoping for when they do this. Are these scholarships still plentiful, and are there new rules in regards to these?
Yeah, so I think it's important to understand, too, that 80% of scholarship opportunities are outside of the Division I level. And a lot of Division II, NAIA, even the Division III programs that can help with academic scholarships, they're going to really start recruiting during senior season. So there's opportunities out there for kids as late as senior year. But when you're talking about, you know, the recruiting the Division I programs that have multi-million dollar recruiting budgets, they typically start early, and it's pretty late to crack a recruiting board this late senior year.
Yeah. Joe, I wonder what you think is some of the biggest changes you see in the pool of students over the years from, you know, maybe 10 years ago to today.
Yeah, so I think one of the biggest things that I'm seeing is kids getting just a little bit more active in their recruiting, you know, with social media and with the internet having film available. When I was going through the recruiting process, I had a VHS tape that me and my dad put together, and we had to mail out to college coaches. So things happen instantaneously this day and age. So you have YouTube, Huddle, and those types of resources right at fingertips, and coaches don't even have to leave their offices to evaluate student-athletes anymore. So it gives advantages to athletes to be able to connect with coaches nationwide and make those connections without even really leaving their home.
In a lot of cases, some of these kids become their own PR agents, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. Social media, I think, is a huge part of that, where, you know, you can basically track what a kid's doing on day-to-day, what camps they're going to, how good they're doing in their games. So not only that, parents get involved, too. They're there to help with student-athletes to market themselves, too.
Yeah, you mentioned that you put together the VHS tape. I would imagine that changing technology, too, has helped in this area, hasn't it, for kids to – I mean, kids today, they know how to use the cameras and all of these different devices, and I bet you they put together some really nice tapes.
Yeah, so there's online platforms where coaches can manage their game film, and kids can create highlight videos. Everybody's got a camera in their pocket on their cell phone, too. So having video is easier for everybody. And, you know, I was a former college coach. I coached at St. Xavier University here in Chicago. And, you know, for us, we didn't have a huge recruiting budget. So having film available online through Huddle, YouTube, and NCSA and all that, it's just very convenient when you don't have a huge budget to go out and travel and recruit.
It seems like, Joe, at the start of every season, the debate over player safety comes up. It's, again, front and center this season, again, with the discussion about how to keep players safe from concussions. What has changed in that discussion over the last few years?
I think it's everyone's just a little bit more aware of it with science and people talking about it. Trainers, coaches, I think everybody's very, very aware that, hey, you know, concussions and head injuries, they're a really big deal and can affect somebody's livelihood and the rest of their life. So I think it's a good conversation, and it's glad that everything's in, and I think everyone's glad that it's in the forefront and everyone's aware of it. And you can start to see just changes in rules, you know, targeting rules and things that really make the game a little bit more safer for everybody.
Yeah. You mentioned that social media, and I bet you coaches are looking at all kinds of things with social media. It would probably be a good idea for kids to clean up their social media, don't you think?
Yeah, that's one of the – there's really three things that coaches look for. One is, can you play athletically? Do you have the grades to get into our school? And character, are you a good person? Do you fit into our locker room? And coaches, if you're tweeting out things, the right things or the wrong things, coaches can either, you know, want to pursue you further or cross you right off of their recruiting board. So it's definitely a great idea for kids to really monitor what they're posting on social media.
Joe, how would you advise if somebody's listening and they want to start taking these steps, what's the first thing they should do? Should they get in contact with you and your organization?
Yeah, they can give us a call and talk with one of our recruiting specialists. And what our recruiting specialists will do is really gauge where they're at in the recruiting process, what steps they should be taking personally, understanding that everybody's recruiting is different. You have kids that get offers in eighth grade and some kids that get offers like I did late in April their senior year. So really gauging where a student-athlete is in the process. And then they got to get a film out. Get your film online, put it together, and that's all stuff that we can help with. We have services from, you know, just creating films and basic services to hand-holding and white-glove service where we can do a lot of the heavy lifting throughout the process.
All right. Joe, good of you to be with us this morning. Have a good season.
Thank you very much.
All right, Joe Lucchese is head football recruiting coach at NCSA, and that's Next College Student Athlete. And you can find more online if you want to get more information at ncsasports.org.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. Dow futures are down about 21 points. NASDAQ and S&P futures are lower as well. Could be a weak opening on Wall Street later this morning, Gasoline futures are up nearly 5%. Crude has turned lower, down about 1%. Crude oil at $47.35 a barrel. Watching the storm, obviously, in Texas, and the aftermath of that impacting energy prices likely today through the rest of the week, if not longer. Let's get the latest now on commodities and agriculture. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. A reminder that we are beginning the last full five-day trading week till the Labor Day weekend. Come next week after Labor Day, we'll have a four-day trading week. So take that into mind as you do your trading this week. Now, let's look at the live cattle contracts and what might happen today. Because last Friday, we got word that the USDA cattle on feed report showed placements on feed at 1.6 million head. That's up from 1.7 million a year earlier. Still, the largest July placement figures since 1,684,000 in 2013. The government put the feedlot cattle supply as of August 1st this year at 10,604,000 head. That's up 4.3%. from a year ago. And the number of cattle sold to packers were up a little more than 4% compared to a year ago at 1,784,000 head. Well, we came to a successful close, or I should say a successful four-day run of the half-century of progress show in Rantoul last night. Tremendous crowds from all over the world, really, and we thoroughly enjoyed once again taking a look at the old tractors, corn pickers, combines, and other machinery that attracted, I would guess, over 100,000 people over the 4 days. Now, tomorrow we begin with the Farm Progress Show, the newest in technology, and it'll be opening its three-day run tomorrow at Decatur, Illinois. We'll see you there all 3 days at the ADM tent at 12 noon. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You as well. A couple of other stories we're watching for you this Monday morning. Expedia CEO Dara Khosrowshahi has been named Uber's top executive, taking the difficult job of mending the dysfunctional ride-hailing giant and turning it from a money-losing behemoth to a profitable company. Uber's fractured 8-member board voted to hire Khosrowshahi late yesterday, capping 3 days of meetings and the withdrawal of the one top candidate, Jeffrey Immelt, former CEO and still chairman of General Electric. Two people briefed on the decision said yesterday they didn't want to be identified because the decision had not been announced as of Sunday night, but it has widely been reported that Khosrowshahi has been tapped to lead Uber. Also this morning, President Trump is accusing Canada and Mexico of being very difficult at the negotiating table over the North American Free Trade Agreement, that's NAFTA, and threatening anew to terminate the deal altogether. Trump tweeted yesterday morning that NAFTA is the worst trade deal ever made. Trump said at a rally last week in Phoenix that he would end up probably terminating NAFTA at some point. The U.S., Mexico, and Canada began formal negotiations earlier this month to rework the 23-year-old trade pact. Now, the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for this Monday. It is August 28th, 2017. Some of the things happening today include the economy, advanced economic indicators for July will be out. The minimum wage in St. Louis will drop today from $10 an hour to $7.70. Why, you ask? Remember, the ordinance was put in place in 2015 for the increase to $10, but it was challenged in court. And this summer, the state legislature passed a bill blocking the city's increase from becoming law. So it goes back from $10 an hour to $7.70 an hour, a pay cut for St. Louis workers today. Also, Amazon will be lowering prices at some Whole Foods stores today. Among Whole Foods items getting discounts, avocados, baby kale, apples, and rotisserie chicken, all organic. Amazon says the company will look at other price structures as it now owns Whole Foods. That closure happening today, closing on the deal happening today. Also, Brexit talks resume today. For the rest of the week, Best Buy earnings tomorrow. U.S. consumer confidence, the report is out. Second quarter U.S. GDP comes out on Wednesday. Campbell's Soup reports earnings on Thursday. And on Friday, the U.S. jobs report. some of the things that could move the markets today and through the week on the Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook.